Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
What up? Welcome in. This is The Herd, wherever you may be and however you may be making this part of your day. Thanks so much. I'm Doug Gottlieb in for Colin Cowherd. Woohoo! Cowherd on vacation. Gottlieb in and, hey, look what fell up on my desk. College hoops to talk about. You know my least favorite mock holiday is, right? April Fool's Day. Is there anything dumber on earth than an April Fool's joke? Like, listen, this is my take on... last night I got the offer from my my son. He's like, Dad, movie theaters are open. Godzilla, King Kong, let's go! He was like Tom Brady, let's go! One of my daughters, Grace, says, lizard versus the ape. No, thank you. It's like, wow, you're kind of like, and we're just, we were hard selling her. We're like, look, movie theaters haven't been open in a year. You know, you guys like The Meg, which is a similar, like really hard to believe thriller, but you know, it's a blockbuster type film. I'm sure it's a good watch. You know, as long as you have to disconnect from reality, right? If you disconnect from reality, it's like, no, I'll watch The Transformers. But I won't watch, because that has some sort of reality as opposed to King Kong versus Godzilla. Anyway, we're like, you know, get back in the movie theaters, movie theater popcorn. She's just like, that sounds like a super spreader event. I was like, really? We do have one Major League Baseball game, which has been, postponed, canceled, whatever, because of COVID. We do have a ton of other stories to get to. Lance Zierlein's going to join us upcoming in 20 minutes. He's got his newest mock draft out. Brandon Whedon's going to join us. Nick Swisher, who makes coffee nervous, is going to join us, talk about Major League Baseball. And Shaka Smart, who left Texas to take the Marquette job. Texas, by the way, is reportedly going to hire Chris Beard, who once upon a time was at Texas as a student and as a I think his manager or whatever under Tom Penner's back in the day. So he leaves Texas Tech. The buyout went down today to $4 million. It's only $4 million Texas, right? And they didn't have to pay Shaka Smart to leave. So whatever. It works. Chris Beard moves over. We got a lot to talk about with some college basketball. I will point out, though, in regards to April Fools, this is a lot like we had this discussion with my kids last night. I don't like horror movies. I will never pay money to see a horror movie, something that terrifies me. I have enough things that bring me to fear in my normal life. I don't need to pay money for somebody to scare the crap out of me. No thanks. The same works with April Fools. It preys upon, one, the idea of believing people, of being gullible. Do you know they took the word gullible out of the dictionary? Really? Yeah. But two, it preys upon fear. I won't do it. So everything that we are going to talk about and report about and decipher today, we believe is 100% real. But I do not like April Fools because I don't get the idea of playing up on somebody's emotions or somebody's ability to believe you, right? Like, you've earned all this equity with being believable. Now you're just going to throw it out the window because it's April 1st. I don't get that one. Sorry. That's just me. That's right. I'm an anti-April Fool's joke sort of guy, right? Pro Halloween, love Halloween. Pro Thanksgiving, love Thanksgiving. Valentine's, I could take it or leave it. I mean, part of it was when I was a kid, everybody had to get a Valentine's card, right? And I'll never forget, I got one that says, I love dog. There's a U, or maybe not, I don't know. But definitely anti-April Fool's jokes. Not an April Fool's joke. And when it came down, this is the problem with April Fool's. It's like, Roy Williams is going to retire. Not April Fool's. Come on. No. They're going to have a press conference. Like, I see. He's going to retire. April Fool's. No. Roy Williams is a 903 wins. He's had knee surgeries. He's lost his best friend. He's had his own episodes with vertigo. The college landscape is changing. It's not fun for Carolina to have to recruit out of the transfer portal. Like that's just not how they roll, right? This is not how they roll in Tobacco Hill. They go out and go like, hey, we want 1, 2, 3, you guys come. The college sport is becoming really, really hard because everything is changing. Not just with the Supreme Court thing yesterday, but the G League Select deal, the transfer portal, the whole thing is a mess. And Roy Williams is like, you know, I'm good. So here's what I can do that no other radio host can do. You ready for it? I can tell you what he was really like to be recruited sort of by, to play against, to experience as a broadcaster, how you should actually recall Roy Williams, who did it, by anyone's account, an amazing job at North Carolina, right? I mean, they won, what, 3 national championships? Which, of course, put him ahead of his mentor, Dean Smith. Here's a guy uniquely never played, wasn't a basketball player, was a manager in college, became, you know, an assistant, worked his way up the chain, was a high school coach for like a year, was basically a manager, became assistant coach, and like this, his path will, I don't believe, will ever be repeated. He went from being an assistant coach at North Carolina, one of, if not the preeminent program in the country at the time, to the head coach at Kansas. I mean, think about that for a second now. Right. Think about that for a second now. Imagine for a second, I mean, Texas is open. Do you think they would have hired an assistant coach who had never coached before? North Carolina is open. Do you think they'd hire an assistant coach who has never been a head coach before? Who has never, didn't play? And he won. I mean, he's, what, 1 losing season, and that was not this year, last year at North Carolina. He won 80% of his games at Kansas, and people were still, I'm like, well, you know, you win a national title. Like, bro, he won 80% of his games. Then he goes to Carolina, and he wins 75% of his games and 3 national titles. You want to know the crazy part? Not really a great game coach. Not really a great game coach. Not a bad, like, they won because they had great players. They played fast, you know, and he wouldn't browbeat them about defense early, and they would get progressively better. So he never lost his team. What happens in basketball, especially college basketball, is you lose a guy here or there mentally and emotionally because they get in the doghouse, whatever. He played a lot of guys oftentimes, so he wouldn't lose his team mentally, emotionally once they got to February and March. But in terms of actual game coach, you know, his most talented team in Kansas, they lost to Rhode Island. And it's, I played against them when they had Rafe LaFrance and Paul Pierce. And this is the story I tell everybody all the time. Now, I played for the late Eddie Sutton, who's now in the Hall of Fame, going to be inducted this year into the Naismith Memorial Hall of Fame. And he had an immense amount of respect for Roy Williams. Like, you are not allowed to say a bad word about Coach Williams or Kansas basketball as long as you were in Stillwater at Oklahoma State. He believed he did it the right way. He was a gentleman. His teams played hard. They played clean. He had, but 1998, they had Rafe LaFrance and Paul Pierce, 2 of the 5 best players in America. And they were playing us the last game of the regular season. And we had won the Big 12 South, but only played them once. And that was the last game of the year. And they had won the Big 12 North going away. They were the best team in the league. The North was softer than the South was, but they had won the league going away. So we played them the last game of the year. And I'll never forget, my coach walks in, and I'd never played against a Roy Williams team. But the reason I knew everything about Coach Williams was, if you grew up in Southern California, there was always a California kid on that team. On that team, there always was. You know, Scott Pollard, I think only 1 year in San Diego, but Scott Pollard and Paul Pierce and Adonis Jordan and you name Eric Chenoweth. They were, and what he would do was, what he is famous for. He was the best head coach recruiter in the country for a major university. Mike Krzyzewski wouldn't do this. Bob Knight wouldn't do it at the time. You know, Jim Herrick was, they were great recruiters, but not, he would, whatever he would do with his practice, I think they'd practice early, he'd get on a plane, he'd fly out, and whoever he was recruiting, he'd sit at midcourt for whoever he was recruiting and just sit there and watch and take notes. And so you knew he was there. I mean, he recruited you himself. And so I one summer I played with Paul Pierce, and who's he here for? He's here for Paul, and he got his guy. But so here's the one kind of flaw to it. I mean, they didn't really change much over the last 30 years. Like the play calls, everything is the almost the exact same. Couple little twists. But I'll never forget this. Eddie Sutton walked in. He goes, man, Kansas is coming in here tomorrow. They're better than you. 8, 10, 12. When they got LaFrance and Pierce, they're 8, 10, 12 points better than you. And we're like, what? This is not the motivational speech I thought we were getting. It's on ABC, right? Now, listen, here's the thing. I've been doing this a long time. The one thing about Coach Williams, we respect him a lot. He's going to take him out now at the same time. And when he does, we're better than them. Maybe only 4 points, but we're better than them. So the next day, and you can go track this. I didn't start because it was senior day, so my man Tommy Warner got a start. He wasn't very good. Then I came in, and I was all hyped up to play Kansas, and I wasn't very good. We get down like, you know, 12-2 to start the game, 14-2, call timeout. We're playing. We're down 8, 10, 12 points. All of a sudden, you see these two gazelles go trotting off the court together. And everybody on our team collectively looks at Coach Sutton like, this man is a god. He foresaw the future. How did he know? And you know what happened when those two superstar college players, future lottery picks, went off the court? We were actually probably a little bit better than them. So we lost by 4 points, I think. I think it was 4 points of the final. Here's the respect we had for Coach Williamson. My senior year, we beat them by 33 points. It was his worst loss ever at Kansas. I think at the time, he had one of his great years at Carolina. They had one stinker against Florida State. I think they lost by 34. But Coach Sutton had such respect for him that they were young. Heinrich and Collison were freshmen, and we were really good and really old, and we kicked the crap out of him. He was like, hey, slow down. I got to go up there next year and get a whooping from Roy, all right? But people ask me all the time, like, what was the best win you had in college? I was like, Kansas by 33 or 19 a week later, we beat the same team. Why? Because it was Kansas. They were the preeminent team in our league. They were coached by an incredible coach who ran an incredible system and had great players. Like, look, it was Carolina. We went to Carolina. They got Argyle. They got Jordan. They got Jordan Brand. They got the cool colors and the cool shoes. And they had a coach that let them play. Like, this, it is a wrap. And now it's a changing of the guard of an era in college basketball. What you should remember about Roy Williams, unbelievable, unbelievable, magnanimous personality, getting along with people in recruiting. Played a great and likable and fun style. Won another national championship, and lost one on a Chris Jenkins three, right? But won another, and I think in 2012 when Kentucky won, people forget Kendall Marshall got hurt. I think Carolina would have won that one. The guy was unbelievable what he did. There are no perfect people. I don't think he was the greatest game coach in the world, but that doesn't a bad coach him make, right? That's how I understand. Sounds like bad English, but it's actually how it's supposed to go. It's like our own kind of dive into Shakespearean sort of thing. Anyway, who's the next head coach? Oh, good luck. Wes Miller's like the only Carolina guy in the pipeline who's kicking butt at UNC Greensboro. Maybe Hubert Davis is one of the kindest human beings on earth who's been there for like a decade, but I don't know if he wants to be the next head coach, or do they go out of the family?
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
What's up, everyone? It's me, three-time NFL All-Pro Sean Merriman, and I have a new sports podcast called The Lights Out Podcast with Sean Merriman. This podcast is special to me as I get a chance to talk to some of the best who've ever done it on the field or the track. So whether it's talking to a Super Bowl champion or a NASCAR Cup Series champion, The Lights Out Podcast will bring it to you the only way I know how to. I'm giving you the best insight from the best who've ever done it. Listen to Lights Out with Sean Merriman on the iHeartRadio app. Or wherever you get your podcast.
Dan Orlovsky, who's a friend and a former quarterback in the NFL, he was on one of those shows over there, and he said, I think he was on with Pat McAfee, and he said that people who knew Justin Fields, and he made sure to separate himself. This is not me reporting it. It's me reporting what other people told me was Justin Fields is a last guy in, first guy out sort of guy. Not his opinion, but what he's been told, right? That he is a, that there have been some questions about his work ethic. And then, of course, Orlovsky, as look, he does this all the time where he goes and he provides film and says, hey, Justin Fields actually does go through his progressions. And he defends Justin Fields' work ethic, or at least his play, not knowing what really goes on in terms of his work ethic. So, look, here's the first thing that's going to happen. And I think it's already happened in some places where, because Justin Fields happens to be black, that if you're critical of him in any way, it's a, well, there's racial connotations to his work ethic. No, there's not. No, there's not. This may make some of my friends and colleagues, and I know one gentleman who works with us who I like a great deal, but this is his default. And this will go to, like, no, it's not. How many times has Colin into this exact same mic called out the focus of Baker Mayfield? Is Baker white or black? Okay. Tim Tebow was not a smart quarterback who did not go through his progressions. There was a massive reach to draft him in the first round. Johnny Manziel, what derailed him? Now, look, there have been black quarterbacks that haven't been. Mike Vick, by his own admissions, wasn't a film study guy when he was in Philadelphia. He just wasn't. It's the most important position in the sport. The entire offense is designed around it. And, like, look, there were stories about this with Dwayne Haskins. And it irritated the coaching staff to a point where they set him free here before the year ever ended. Right? The nature of the position, you are the face of a franchise. And so all of this background stuff is valid, is accurate, is, like, you're establishing. It's why, it's the real reason why you need 3 years in college. Because 1 year in college, and most of these coaches can spot a fraud. They know which guys are really about it or not. But you can hide some of it. 3 years, can't hide from who you really are. You just can't. So, yeah, it can. When I see him run a 4-4 yesterday, and I watched him play in the national semifinal game, I'm like, this dude is legit. Why wouldn't he be? Right, like, I'm looking at where the league is going. How, Kyle Shanahan, how could you possibly not go to his pro day, instead go to Mac Jones's pro day? And then I think back, and I think, okay, so Kyle Shanahan once upon a time was the offensive coordinator in Washington, and RG3 was his quarterback. And though RG3 was a rookie of the year and he got hurt, remember he got hurt? We thought he was hurt anyway, and then he tore his ACL. But the big thing with RG3 was they couldn't play him in Kyle Shanahan's offense. Kyle Shanahan's offense has been successful with Matt Ryan, who doesn't have a great arm, right? Not a great athlete, but good enough and deadly accurate and smart as all get out, right? Kirk Cousins, Matt Schaub, right? So you try and evaluate not just based upon who's super talented, but whose talent fits what has led you to be successful in the past. And so it would stand to reason. I think the third pick for Mac Jones as opposed to for Justin Fields? Like, Justin Fields looks like what I would suspect a quarterback is supposed to look like for the next 20 years. He's young. He's crazy athletic. He's got a good arm. It's not like he's a convert to the position. Like, he was the number one recruit to when he went to Georgia, and then he goes to Ohio State. And as soon as he got on the field at Ohio State, like, he was legit freak. What could possibly, like, this is good insight. But what we'll do is, it'll be the messenger. It'll be somebody who's hating. It'll be whatever. When this is all information that every one of these NFL teams has. And if it's not true, then they know, and they're going to draft him anyway. No team makes an evaluation based upon something that's said on TV. It just doesn't happen. You know, we were going to trade up, but then Orlovsky said, presented us with some information. Like, yeah, no. No matter how much, and I love Dan, and Dan's his football IQ, he's forgotten more about the position than I'll ever know. But those guys in those front offices, they've done their due diligence. And if there's some work ethic issues, oh, they know it. You know? Jimmy Haslam is literally the only guy listening to homeless people on the street. That landed him Johnny Manziel instead of a Teddy Bridgewater. How'd that work out for him? So I do have some concerns over Justin Fields' work ethic, because that has to be one of the primary explanations for why he wouldn't be viewed as an elite quarterback at the level of a Zach Wilson, or how a Matt Jones, who looks like just a dude athletically, could be placed ahead of him.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
What's up, everyone? It's me, three-time NFL All-Pro Sean Merriman, and I have a new sports podcast called The Lights Out Podcast with Sean Merriman. This podcast is special to me as I get a chance to talk to some of the best who've ever done it on the field or the track. So whether it's talking to a Super Bowl champion or a NASCAR Cup Series champion, The Lights Out Podcast will bring it to you the only way I know how to. I'm giving you the best insight from the best who've ever done it. Listen to Lights Out with Sean Merriman on the iHeartRadio app, or wherever you can get your podcast.
So Lindsay said this about Drew Locke, because a lot of people are wondering, like, Denver was in on the Deshaun Watson thing. Denver seems to be still at least in some sort of orbit, if you will, over what's going to happen in New York with Sam Darnold. And, oh yeah, by the way, they could be, you know, maybe in the market to draft a quarterback. Why? Like, there's the Drew Locke. Drew Locke is cool. He dances to hip hop. He must be cool. I believe he's got what the kids like to call swag. He is lit. He wears his hat backwards. But here's the, you cannot fool players. Okay? We can fool all of you. Well, the coach said, do you think they're going to tell you the truth? Right? I mean, look, Dan Orlovsky always said was Justin Fields, last guy in, first one out. That's what he's been told. He's like, oh, you're the worst human being on earth. Okay, I'm just relaying what people actually told me that I trust, that I respect. Anyway, Philip Lindsay, of course, it's a good time. You know, Dan Patrick does this all the time, does this exit interviews. You know, somebody leaves the leader, and he does an interview with him. And, you know, everybody's kind of that scorned lover, if you will. So Lindsay was on SiriusXM NFL Radio. Drew holds his own future. Things have been set in place for him to be successful. He has to take advantage of it. He needs to continue to develop. That's on him. He's in a battle between him and him, nobody else. What does that mean? Is he in his own head? I don't think that's what it means. I think if he's in his own head, he would have said, hey, he's in his own head. He's limiting himself. He should have confidence in himself. But what you're reading from Philip Lindsay is things have been set in place for him to be successful. Look, dude, we have a good team. We have good wide receivers. We have good running backs. We have a good line. We have good play calling. He has to take advantage of it. In other words, he hasn't. He needs to continue to develop. He's not there. That's on him. If you can't see all the handwriting on the walls over Denver, if you can't, you're not fooling Philip Lindsay. You're not fooling him. If you're battling yourself, you're not winning over your locker room. You're not winning over your running back. That's as light of a normal and very honest critique as you're possibly going to find. But in 2 years in the NFL, if you're still battling your own self, battling your own ego in order to make it, you know, your reputation is well established. So this is more than a guess. This is with a little bit of knowledge. Like, Denver's going to have a different quarterback next year. Because, and this is a little bit like, I talked about this with Colin with Baker Mayfield. And the difference, you remember when Josh Rosen was coming out? And so here's what I told Colin that a couple of NFL people told me. Like, look, we went to Josh's high school, went to his college, his coaches, teammates, and whatever. And there wasn't one guy who was like, that's my dog. That's my ride or die. That's my guy. Baker Mayfield has flaws. He's not that big. He's not that athletic. He's got a sizable ego. He trolls. You know, I'm sure he Twitter searches his name all the time. Okay, good arm, not great arm. He's very smart, but let's not act like he's some savant, right? He's not as sharp as some of these guys. He's really good. He's played a lot of football, and he's fine. But here's the thing that Baker Mayfield has. You go to Oklahoma, and you ask guys about Baker Mayfield, you're like, that's my guy right there. You know? You go to the Cleveland Browns, and that's my guy right there. I'd do anything for Baker. I do anything for Baker. That's the difference. These quarterbacks, they all have it. If you've ever sat with a really, really good politician, you ever sat with a really good politician, you can be completely opposed to many of their policies, right? Like, you can be anti whatever, but if you sit with them, you may not walk away agreeing with their policies, but you'll walk away going like, you know, I really like that guy. I hate where he stands on that one thing, right? But God, I can't help but like the guy. You sit down with these quarterbacks and you're like, I love him. You're my favorite. I love him. You sit down with Cam Newton. Like, that's the whole, you're like, I like Cam. I can't say anything bad about Cam Newton. Hell, Deshaun Watson, like, the hard thing for all these stories out of Houston is I haven't ever found anybody in the NFL that ever had a bad interaction with Deshaun Watson. Not his college coach, not his teammates, not his high school coach, not his NFL coaches. None of them are like, you know, he's secretly not a good guy. No, none of them. None of them. And by the way, this is not them saying Drew Locke is a bad guy. But NFL players want to win games. They want somebody who has gotten over themselves, who understands what it takes to win, knows how to do it. And Philip Lindsay crushed him without having to crush him. The handwriting's on the wall there. Denver wasn't just mentioned in the Deshaun Watson story because Deshaun thought Denver was set at quarterback. Everybody knows they're looking for somebody who's not into themselves as much, into winning football games, doesn't have to still develop, can take advantage of all the weapons they have. That's what that criticism means. All right, coming up next, Brandon Whedon will join us. I'll ask him about Drew Locke. And then I want to ask him about the Justin Fields. I got to ask him about Mac Jones. Like, is there a style of quarterback which fits Kyle Shanahan's system? And is that Mac Jones? Or is that Justin Fields? Or is it Trey Lance? We'll get to that with Brandon Whedon upcoming next. But first, good news for diehard MLB fans. You will be allowed to attend games this season where you sit in pods within your group. Sporting arenas aren't the only place that are slowly coming back to normal. Businesses everywhere are making a gradual shift towards normalcy, which means more hiring. That's where ZipRecruiter comes in. And right now, you can try it for free. Only ZipRecruiter.com/herd. When you post the job on ZipRecruiter, It gets sent to over 100 top job sites in just one click. Then ZipRecruiter's matching technology finds people with the right experience for your job and actively invites them to apply. No wonder 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free only at ZipRecruiter.com/herd. See why companies go wild over ZipRecruiter. When you go to ZipRecruiter.com/HERD, ZipRecruiter, smartest way to hire.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
He just got himself a new job. He's in a new city. He's back in the Midwest. He actually grew up in the state which he now calls home. He's Shaka Smart, Marquette head basketball coach, joining us in the Herd. Shaka, how are you?
I'm great. How are you, Doug? Great to talk to you.
Likewise. All right, first and most important thing, okay? You kind of shocked the world with growing out your hair this year. I have not seen you in a couple of days. What is the current status of your hair?
Current status is I saw a barber for the first time in, I don't know, probably 20-some years the other day. But he just gave me a little trim, so I still have most of my hair.
Yeah, so you're keeping it, right? Like, I think you keep it. You look, I mean, it's if I had hair like that, I would never cut my hair. Definitely never shave it off. I don't shave my hair off now because I don't think it'll grow back.
Yeah, it's kind of day to day. My wife and daughter love to just continually make fun of me. So I don't think they'll let me cut it right now, but I'm certainly more comfortable just cutting it all off.
Okay, so how would you, if somebody was to say, hey, Shaka, what was your experience like at Texas? What would your answer be?
Great experience. Was around some terrific people, and, it's obviously an unbelievable place. Really enjoyed, the guys that we had on the court. There was lots of twists and turns. We had some really terrific moments and big wins, and then we had some heartbreakers. Probably the most extreme thing we went through was Andrew Jones, getting leukemia and then recovering from leukemia, which is just incredible. But it was, man, I learned so much, and we were able to form some terrific relationships, and hopefully that all makes me a better coach.
You mentioned that, like, it's always the cruelness of this tournament, right? Like, you won the Big 12 tournament championship, then you lose to Abilene Christian. So all anybody remembers is the Abilene Christian. They don't remember, like, hey, just a week ago we were Big 10 tournament champions. How do you process that?
That's tough. I mean, it's really a roller coaster, and I think this year even more so because of COVID. Looking back on it, I wish I would have known a little bit more about kind of what we were getting ourselves into with the bubble in Indianapolis. We knew to some extent, but it was an interesting thing. And I also think, Doug, I don't know how you feel about this. When you win your conference tournament, there's certainly some good momentum that you're feeling, but sometimes that can work against you a little bit in the NCAA tournament. I've seen that work both ways. So, yeah, it was tough and, certainly a disappointing way to end.
Okay. Why leave and take the Marquette job? Everybody wants to ask the same question I'll ask you.
Well, there's just certain things here that, for me, are a better fit. I never want to go into disparaging any other place or anything like that. But I think just for me personally, just made all the sense in the world and for my family. This is a basketball crazy place, as you know. The history here, the program, this is the school in a lot of ways. Basketball is a big part of what makes it go. Number two, it's smaller. It's not, as just a gigantic state university. And again, I think because of that size, you're able to specialize a little bit more on exactly what you need to do to support your guys. And then number three, I got a sense right away that, this is there was great alignment here from the president on down in terms of, you know, what it takes to be a high-level basketball program.
Yeah, I mean, the story going around college basketball is that, like, top five, top three maybe even in basketball budget. Is that accurate?
Well, I don't know what everyone else has, but all I can tell you is my experience here in being here for less than a week is that, you know, the support is incredible, and it's, you know, the default answer is, well, let's find a way, you know, to make that happen. You know, you really appreciate that. But even more than the financial part is just the approach that, hey, let's get this done. Let's work together on it. And how can I help?
Shaka Smart, new head coach at Marquette, joining us. Doug Gottlieb in for Colin. This is The Herd on Fox Sports Radio, the iHeartRadio app. Why didn't it work in the NCAA tournament when it worked so well at VCU?
Same reason as anyone else. I think, you know, sometimes there's good fortune, and, you know, sometimes there's plays that don't go your way. The games that we lost, let's see.
Look, if you just take the Abilene Christian, you guys block a shot. If you secure the rebound or don't foul, you win the game. You win the game. There's a bunch of things that go, and if you win that game, we've seen it with UCLA, right? You win the first game. Now all of a sudden, like, your kids relax, you start to play.
Absolutely. And we've had, Doug, and again, I'm not complaining because we were really fortunate. Although we won most of those games by a pretty good margin when we went to the Final Four. But, you know, it takes good fortune to get to the Final Four. And then sometimes it doesn't work out your way. We literally, you know, the game before that, same situation. We're up two down the stretch against Nevada. Foul got called on Mo. The game before that, Northern Iowa made a 50-foot shot to beat us in overtime. So it happens. And, you know, I think the lesson is for your team. And we always – my little brother wrote a poem about this when we were kids. It pays to win by 11, because that kind of stuff doesn't – you know, those plays, you know, you can't really point to them if it's an 11-point win.
I like that. It pays to win by 11. Pays to win by 11. Was there when you took the job, was there any, I need to sleep on this? Like, you're at Texas, you know, you're a year away from a new arena. They weren't firing you, right? How hard was it to ultimately walk in and tell Chris Del Conte, I'm going to take this job?
It really wasn't hard to make the decision to take the job. For the reasons I mentioned, it also, as you know, I mean, there's other family or situational factors that either make it time or not time. And in this case, you know, a lot of those factors just kind of lined up for it to be time. You know, Matt Coleman was a senior point guard for us at Texas. You know, in a lot of ways, a lot like a son or a younger brother. Had he been a junior or underclassman, you know, there's certain special players like that, you know, you feel certainly aligned with or connected with. But it really, at the end of the day, was a slam dunk decision for my family and I.
What is it like to do what UCLA is doing, when only you guys have done before? Go from the first four to the final four.
Well, you know, it's interesting because I watched their first four game very closely. Not that I was looking past our first round game, but if we were able to win the first round game, you know, we could potentially play one of those teams. And by that point, if you remember, by that point in the week, everyone was so starved for basketball because, you know, selection show was on a Sunday and that game was on a Thursday. And those of us that were in the bubble were literally stuck in a hotel 24 hours a day. So just for that game to come on TV was, like, you know, awesome. So, you know, they did a phenomenal job just kind of weathering the storms of that Michigan State game and hanging in there. And they flat out won the game because they were the more connected team. They kind of stayed connected, and then they had two players that really played with incredible confidence and, you know, had career-type games in that game, and obviously have played well since. So once you get rolling, you know, you get that first one under your belt, and then next one's a pretty good matchup, and you get that one. It's similar to what happened with us, and it's exciting for those guys.
Last thing, are you bringing back the Havoc?
Well, you know, I think that, number one, the game's changed to some extent. Unfortunately, the adjustments in officiating, I think, have hurt pressing to some extent. I think if you talk to Bob Huggins or other coaches that have pressed in the past, they would tell you the same thing. The cylinder rule is a nemesis of any type of trap, especially out on the floor, because the refs love to call that. It's kind of a little bit of an out for them. So I don't know that 40 minutes of pressing makes sense, particularly in a, you know, in a top five league where the guards are on most nights going to be really, really good. But to be honest with you, Havoc for us at VCU, it was so much more about our mentality and the approach we took than necessarily what exact, you know, defense we were in. And we did press on pretty much every possession. So that was a big part of it. But I think we turned teams over more in the half court than we did in the full court. But defensively, the goal is to stop the other team, you know, not necessarily to turn them over. And so actually some of our teams at Texas were better on defense than some of the VCU teams.
All right. Well, listen, I thought there were plenty of fouls in that ACU game. We can talk about probably off air. You'd like to vent in regards to officiating, but we vote Havoc and we vote for the hair. At least we get one or two. Shaka, thanks so much for joining us.
Hey, thank you, man. I got a ton of respect for what you do, and, you know, appreciate the way that you uplift the sport.